Yehuda tells Yosef that Yaakov is Nafsho Kshura B'Nafsho with Binyamin. It's his youngest from his favorite wife who's no longer alive, and the other brother is gone, and therefore Nafsho Kshura B'Nafsho. Says the Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam on this pasuk, why is Nafsho Kshura B'Nafsho? Why are their nefashos, their neshamos, bonded together? Al Shalim Do Torah, because he taught in Torah. You see from here that the kesher that can be created by learning Torah with somebody is even greater than the bond between a father and a son, with all of the conditions that we mentioned that existed between Yosef and Binyamin and Yaakov. Still, the bond was nothing compared to the bond you can create by learning Torah with somebody. Therefore, it's no wonder that when somebody teaches someone Torah, they become mamish like his children. So you're all my children, I guess. That's what it means. That bond is even stronger than the bond of a father and a child with all the conditions that existed by Yaakov Avinu. Okay. Next. Famous Medrash. Famous Beis Halevi. I want to give you some other explanations, but I'll mention the Beis Halevi anyway. Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, and he says, Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai. And the pasuk says, V'lo yochlu echov lanososo ki nivhalu mipanov. They couldn't answer him. They were astounded. The Medrash says the following, Oy lanu miyom hadin, Oy lanu miyom hatochacha. They to us, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us Musar and judge us in the future. If the brothers couldn't stand up to the Musar of Yosef when he said to them, Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai, how in the world are we going to stand up to the Musar and Tochacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'asid lavo? The obvious question is, what's the Musar? All he said was, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? Where's the Musar here? So the Beis Halevi gives a famous explanation, and he says the following. He asks another question. Why did Yosef have to ask if Yaakov was alive? If Yaakov wasn't alive, really, then what was Yehuda making such a big deal of taking Binyamin's place? If his father wasn't alive, it made no difference. Obviously, from Yehuda's efforts, it was obvious that what they said, that Yaakov was alive, is true. So why do you have to ask again? Says the Beis Halevi, that was part of the Musar. The worst Musar that you can get is that you are not consistent. You're a self-contradiction. Meaning the following. La'asid lavo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask a person, why didn't you give tzedakah? So the person is going to give all kinds of excuses. I didn't have the money. I needed that money to support my family, Rabban Shalom. You knew that I wasn't a rich person. So the Rabban Shalom is not going to go into a long tirade of how important tzedakah is, and that is going to be the Musar. But he's going to take out his book, and he's going to say, that's very interesting. But on this and this date, at this and this time, I have recorded here that you ate in this restaurant. This is what the bill was. This is what the tip was. For a person who didn't have money to give to tzedakah, where'd you get the money to eat in the restaurant? Person's going to be asked, why didn't you have time to go to a shir to learn Torah? And the person's going to say, you know, I was busy. I had to earn a living. I was a housewife. I was busy. I didn't have time to go out to shiurim. Okay. So the Rebbe Shem's not going to go into a long discussion of how important it is to learn Torah. But he's going to take out his book and he's going to say, okay, you didn't have time. But according to my records, on this day, at this time, you spoke for an hour and a half, Lashon Hara, on the phone. Where did you get that time? If you didn't have time, how did you find the time to gab on the phone for an hour and a half? You could have gone in that time to a shir. the worst mussar and tochacha is being a self-contradiction, being inconsistent. So too, says the Beis Halevi, that is the mussar over here by Yosef. Yosef says, you are begging me to let Binyamin go. You're even willing to take his place. Why? Because you are entreating me and trying to use your poor father's condition, right, as the wedge to get me to agree to let Binyamin go. Because you're so concerned about your father. Ani Yosef, remember me? How old Avicha is it? Father, is possible my father is still alive for what you did to him? Because of me? You're so concerned about your father when it serves your interest. But when it didn't serve your interest, you weren't concerned about your father at all. So don't tell me that you want me to give in and send Binyamin home because you're so concerned about how it's going to affect your father. Where was your concern for your father when you sold me? That's the mussar that Yosef gave his brothers, and that is the mussar that everybody's going to have to face, Lasid Lavo. That is the Beis Halevi. I want to say a few different ideas. One based on the Michtav Eliyahu. The Michtav Eliyahu explains the Medrash, or Gemara really. The Gemara says, Ein Gehenim La'asid Lavo. There's no place called Gehenim, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take the shield off the sun, and the light of the sun will be a refuah for the tzaddikim and gehenim for the rishoyim. So he explains it in the following way. In this world, people hide behind excuses, justifications, and they convince themselves that almost everything they do is right. And even rishoyim, who do terrible things, have a lot of excuses and justifications. The worst gehenim is to be faced with the truth and not to have an excuse and not to be able to justify it. Tzaddikim also have doubts. People aren't sure if they're doing what's right. And they're plagued by doubts that gnaw away at them. La'asid lavo HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to uncover the sun, and that bright light is going to burn away all the excuses, all the justifications, all the things that people fooled themselves one way or the other. It's going to be very clear what the emes is. That emes is going to be the gehenim for Rishoyim, to have to face the truth without being able to find excuses and justifications. And for tzaddikim, it's going to be a tremendous refuah because it's going to take away all their doubts. And they're going to be sure of what they did was good. And that's going to be the greatest Gan Eden. So facing the truth is a gehenim for Rishoyim and a Gan Eden for Tzaddikim. And therefore, that's what happened over here. What was the mussar? The mussar was, Ani Yosef, till now, for 22 years, you've convinced yourself that I was a threat to you, that I was out to get you, and you therefore justified what you did to me. Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. I could have killed you all because of what I perpetrated on you here in Mitzrayim. And I didn't. So ha'od avichai, what you did to our father, thinking that you were justified, has no justification anymore. And therefore, that's the greatest mussar, the greatest tochacha that Yosef could give. All he did was reveal to them the truth. Now it's obvious that all your excuses and all your justifications for selling me were not true, because I'm Yosef, right? And you see, I could have done everything you thought I was going to do to you, and I didn't do it. I had you in my clutches, and I'm not interested in hurting you. So ha'od avichai, now you're going to have to suffer for everything you did to our father, thinking you did it justified when it wasn't justified at all. That's the mussar. And that's the mussar HaKadosh Baruch Hu's going to give each and every one of us. Everybody is going to have a slew of excuses and answers and justifications. And the Rabbanu Shalom is going to make them all melt away. And then we're going to have to face the truth. And that's the biggest problem. Okay. Two other explanations that I think could be that are very closely connected. So we'll say them together as one. Let's start with the first one like this. There, David HaMelech was punished because he called the Torah Zemiros. Zemiros hayu li chukecha, as if the Torah is a song. And the Rabban Shom said, how could you call the Torah a song? So he punished him, and David HaMelech forgot the most basic thing, that you're not allowed to put the Aron on a wagon, it has to be carried by human beings. And David HaMelech forgot that, and he put it on a wagon, and because of that, Uzzah thought that the Aron was falling off the wagon, and he put his hand to support it, and he died. And all of that was generated because David HaMelech called the Torah Zemiros. In one second we'll explain what in the world's going on here, what's the connection between all of this, but it's another question. The Torah calls itself a Shira. Kisvu lochem es Hashira Hazos is the mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. Now some say it replies to Shiras Ha'azinu, and you can't write only one parsha of the Torah by itself, you have to write the whole Torah. So therefore, when it says Kisvu lochem es Hashira, it means write the whole Torah. But others learn that Shira is the Torah. The Torah is called a Shira. So if the Torah calls itself a Shira, what's so wrong with calling the Torah Zemiros? The answer, I think, is there is a significant difference between Zimra and Shira. The word Shira comes from the word Yashar, or from the word Lashur, to gaze at something. Shira is an expression of the essence of something. Perek Shira. Everything in the world has a Shira that it sings. It doesn't literally mean that dogs sing a song, or trees sing a song, or rocks sing a song. The expression of the essence of that thing is its song. How it expresses its essence. It doesn't have to say a word. But the essence of a rock should bring to mind the following pasuk. It expresses its essence through that pasuk. So Shira means the expression of the essence of something. That's Shira. Zimra, on the other hand, is different. Zimra has a connection to the word Zmira. Zmira means to prune. Not allowed to prune your vines, right, a kerem on Shemitah. What's Zmira? You prune something to take away extra or weak growth in order to give the tree a stimulus, to stimulate the tree to grow better in what's left. You take away externals, negative things, and you stimulate the tree to grow better in what's left. That's Zmira. Zmira is pruning away the weak vines, or the negative vines, the weak ones, in order to give the strong ones more power. Okay. So Zmira is an external stimulus. It's not the expression of the essence. Torah is Shira. Torah is the expression of a person's essence. Ki heim chayenu va'orech yomenu. But Torah is not an external stimulus. It's not something separated from the person that stimulates him from the outside. It is the expression of a person's essence. That's where David HaMelech made the mistake. He gave the impression that Torah is something external to the person, like Zmira, and not essentially part of a person's essence. Therefore, Mida Keneged Mida, the Rabban Shom said, since you gave people this impression, I'm going to make you make a mistake, and you'll see what happens when you think the Torah is not part of the essence of a person. What's the reason that you have to carry the Aron with the Luchos and not put it on a wagon? Because the Torah can never be separated from a human being. Torah is part and parcel of the human being. It's not a separate thing. If you put it on a wagon, it's a separate entity. I'm here, it's there. If you carry it by hand, it means it's part of you. So the exact same thing that David HaMelech was guilty of giving the impression that Torah is a Zmira but not a Shira, it's not part of a person's essence, it's merely an external stimulus, is exactly the mistake that the Rabban Shem made him make, to carry the Aron on a wagon, not by hand. And when that happens, people begin to think that they're supporting the Torah's not supporting them. They think that when you carry the Torah carries the people who carry it. And here Uzzah thought that the Torah's falling off the wagon, he has to support it. Then you come way beyond the mistake of thinking that Torah is an external thing. You begin to think that you support the Torah instead of the Torah supporting you. That was the mistake of David HaMelech. Therefore, I think we have a pasuk that says the following: Ashira l'Hashem b'chayai, azamra l'Elokai b'odi. Simple meaning is, I'll sing to the Rabbanu Shalom when I'm alive, and I will sing to him Zmiros while I'm still around, b'odi. But I think there's a different meaning, and that's the following: everyone has the essence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him, potential. That's the essence of a person's life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a person. That's chayai. That's the life that God gives, the chesed, potential that everybody has. Then there's the ode, the extra that a person has to produce from that potential. Every person is expected to take the potential that they have and develop it, and develop more than they were given in potential. Take that potential and develop it. That's called OD, the extra. With that essence that God gave me, I'll sing. I'll express my essence. Ashir al Hashem b'chayai. But in order to produce the extra, to stimulate that essence and create more than the essence that I was given, to develop it, to bring it out more, that I need Zmira. That I need external things to develop that essence. So, Ashira l'Hashem b'chayai, but Azamra l'Elokai b'odi, with the extras. Now, using that, maybe that was the Musar that Yosef gave his brothers. Ani Yosef. Okay? And let me add one more thing. In order to bring out that essence, a person sometimes can do it on his own and use external stimuli to be able to do it. But sometimes you need a catalyst. Sometimes other people interact with you and they help to bring out your potential. Sometimes you need another person to be able to bring out the potential. Yaakov Avinu was promised that by the Rabbanu Shalom, that if he predeceased all his children, in other words, he died before all of his children, that he was guaranteed a chelik in Olam Haba. But if any of his children died before him, the guarantee didn't stand. Now, I have a way of understanding that. It's not necessarily the case. It could be there's other explanations. But the way I understand it is the following. Yaakov Avinu was a multifaceted person. He had many, many aspects of his personality. Each one of his children represented one aspect of his personality. Yosef represented in a small way all the aspects of Yaakov's personality, but that's not for now. But in any case, each one had, Yehuda had the Malchus of that was existed in Yaakov Avinu, and Levi had the Kedusha, and so on and so on. If Yaakov Avinu, during his entire lifetime, would have a chance to interact with all his children, then his entire personality would be brought out perfectly, and that's Olam Haba, perfection. If, however, any of his children died in his lifetime, then that interaction would be cut short, and he wouldn't be able to bring out every facet of his personality through the interaction with his children, and therefore he wasn't guaranteed that shleimus, that perfection. He wasn't guaranteed that Olam Haba. Now let's go back to the pasuk. Yosef says the following: Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. Okay, Ha'od Avichai, is my father still alive? I know your father's still alive, the father of Reuven and Shimon. All of you have had a chance to interact with him all these years. So the father of Reuven is alive in Yaakov. But I'm Yosef. Is my father still alive? You took away the ability for him to interact with me. Have you killed that facet of his personality and take away that shleimus from him? And add to that Ha'od avichai? Maybe you've let our father alive. I know he's living, but maybe he's only surviving. Is he still really productive? Is the ode of my father still alive? The extras. Or have you relegated him to just survival and not to be able to be dynamic? So Yosef said two things. Ha'od and avi. Is the extras that Yaakov Avinu was supposed to develop, is that still alive? Or have you relegated him to just surviving? And avi and those parts of him that I was supposed to bring out through our interaction, have you killed that away completely? And that's the same mussar that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give each and every one of us. I gave you potential. I gave you life. I gave you people that you could interact with and bring out their potential, and people that you could interact with that would bring out your potential. Did you bring out your potential? Ha'od, do you have the ode, or are you just giving me back what I gave you? Did you develop that potential or not? And did you help other people develop that potential, and did you interact with people who could have helped you to bring out your potential? That's the Musar HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give. Are you returning to me what I gave you? Or are you giving me the ode? And are you giving me the things that you could have helped other people develop, and other people help you develop? That's the Musar. Okay. Enough of that. Next. The Torah says that when they revealed to Paro that Yosef's brothers came, so Paro is very interested in getting this family down to Mitzrayim. I mean, he had such success with this one brother. Imagine what's going to happen when the father comes here and the other brothers. So Paro tells Yosef the following. Tell your brothers to do the following. Tanu es bi'irchem ulechu bo arza kanan. Load up your donkeys and go back home. And bring your father and his household back to me. I want you to come to Mitzrayim. Ve'etno lachem is tuv eretz Mitzrayim. Ve'ichlu es chelev ha'aretz. I'll give you the best of eretz Mitzrayim. You'll eat the fat of the land. Ve'ata tzuvei sazos asu. And Paro continues and says to Yosef, I command you to do the following. Take wagons from Mitzrayim and bring your family here. Don't worry about your utensils. Because when you get here, I'll give you the best of Egypt. And it is that Vayasu came in Israel, Vayiten Liam Yosef Agolos Api Paro. Yosef gave them wagons as Paro told him to, and he gave them food, and they went. They get to Canaan, and they tell Yaakov that Yosef's still alive. He doesn't believe him. Then Vayareso Agolos Asher Sholach Yosef Losesoso. He saw the wagons that Yosef sent, Vatechi Ruach Yaakov Avihim. Then Yaakov came back alive. He believed then that Yosef's still alive. Rashi says, the Gemara, why, what all of a sudden convinced him? He saw the wagons that Yosef sent, and he knew that Yosef was hinting to him that the last thing they learned together was Egla Rufa. And he knew that Yosef is really alive. He got the hint, he got the code, right? And now he knows that Yosef's alive. Now he's alive, he remembers what they were learning, the last thing, Egla Rufa. This is phenomenal, for a few reasons. First of all, who sent the wagons? Paro. Yosef didn't even send the wagons. Paro sent them. How in the world did Yaakov see that Yosef, by sending the wagons, was hinting him that they learned Egla Rufa when Yosef didn't send the wagons? Paro did. Okay. So there's a medrash that says that the wagons that Paro sent were engraved with Avodah Zarah. And Yehuda burnt them. And Yosef sent other wagons. Okay, so now we fixed up that problem, that it wasn't Paro's wagons, it was Yosef's wagons. Very nice. There's only one problem. The Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says, when they actually come back to Mitzrayim, it says, Vayokum Yaakov Beersheva, Vayisu Bnei Yisrael, Es Yaakov Aviyam, Ves Tapon, Ves Nesheyam, Bagolos, Asher Sholach, Paro, Lassis, Oso. They went in the wagons that Paro sent. Now, if those wagons were burnt, how did they travel in charcoal? So it must be that they traveled in the wagons that Paro sent, not Yosef. So we're back with the same problem. It was the wagons that Paro sent. So what does the Medrash say that Yehuda burnt them? How could Yehuda have burnt them if it says they went in the wagons that Paro sent? Beyond that, even let's say that Yosef sent the wagons. How in the world did Yaakov get a hint of Egla Arufa? I can understand if Yosef sent along a little toy calf. And he said, give this to your father, he'll understand. And they give Yaakov, we don't understand what's going on, you give a little toy calf. He says, Yosef remembers, the last thing we're talking about is Egla Arufa. Okay? But he didn't do that. He sent wagons, first of all, that Paro sent. Let's say Yosef sent them. He sent them wagons. So, Egla sounds like Agola. Okay? So, I would understand if there was no purpose to send a wagon. He didn't have a little calf to send. So he sent a wagon, which wasn't necessary for anything. And Yaakov says, why an Agola? Oh, Agola sounds like Egla. Must be that Yosef's hinting to me that we learned Egla Rufa. Okay? That would make sense. Why did he send the wagons? Because they had to move. It's like somebody sending somebody a moving truck so he can move. And when the truck gets there, the guy says, oh, I get it. You're wishing me good luck because truck sounds rhymes with luck. No, there's no hint over here. I'm sending you a truck because you got to move. Why in the world is there any hint over here of Egla Rufa? He sent him Agolos. Right? It's beyond comprehension. So let me tell you what I think. What I think is the following. If you look at the Psukim, it's very clear that Paro sent wagons only for the people. But he didn't send wagons for their furniture, for their clothing, for anything else. Why? Because Paro wanted Yaakov and his children to come to Mitzrayim very badly. But he knew, especially old people, don't like to move. Because they're set in their ways, it's hard for them to acclimate themselves and accommodate themselves to new surroundings. Therefore, Paro thought, if I will entice Yaakov Avinu, that I'll make it easy for him to assimilate in Mitzrayim and to feel comfortable here, then he'll come. So therefore, he told him, look, don't bring your clothes, don't bring your furniture, make a yard sale, sell it all over there, and when you come here, I will outfit you with the best Egyptian clothing, the best Egyptian furniture. You'll feel like a native. You'll assimilate into Egyptian culture quickly. And he thought with that, he would entice Yaakov to come and give him reason to come. Yosef knew that if I go home and tell my father that, he won't come here in a million years. The last thing that Yaakov Avinu wants is for him or his family to assimilate in Mitzrayim. Therefore, Yosef sent other wagons, Alpi Paro, not according to the command of Paro. Paro commanded him to send wagons just for the people. But his intention was, in that way, to entice him to come. Yosef knew that just the opposite. If I tell my father that he's going to assimilate in Mitzrayim, he'll never come. Therefore, Alpi Paro. I understand Paro's desire. But the way to do it is completely different. I'm going to send wagons for everything. They're going to bring everything here in order that they should create a little enclave of Eretz Yisrael in Mitzrayim and that they won't assimilate. They'll wear their Israeli clothing and they'll have their Israeli furniture and they will create a little enclave of Eretz Yisrael within Mitzrayim. That's how they'll survive and not assimilate. And then my father will come. So he sent Agolos al Pi Paro, according to Paro's wishes, but not according to his command. So what did Yaakov see? He saw the extra wagons that Yosef sent for all of his material possessions. The wagons that they went in were the wagons that Paro sent. It says that Yehuda burnt them. Doesn't mean literally. And it doesn't mean that there was Avodah Zarah engraved on it. But wagons that were sent just for the people, with the intention that when they get to Mitzrayim, they'll be outfitted with all the Egyptian culture and be able to assimilate, that's Avodah Zarah. How did Yehuda burn it? By taking the extra wagons that Yosef gave them and taking them out of Mitzrayim. That burnt, that nullified, that negated the Avodah Zarah. Because now, by taking the extra wagons, they weren't going to assimilate. They're going to bring everything and create a little enclave of Eretz Yisrael inside Mitzrayim. And I'll prove it to you if that's what Yosef wanted to do. Later on, Yosef tells his brothers, you don't know how to talk to the king, so I'm going to coach you. When Paro calls you and he asks you, what do you do for a living? You should say X. Why? Because Toavas Mitzrayim Kol Roei Tzon. Because the Egyptians abominate shepherds. The sheep is their god. And they can't stand shepherds because shepherds treat sheep like animals. And they're gods. So, if you were, you didn't know the pasuk. Okay? And I would ask you, okay, what do you think Yosef told his brothers? The end of the pasuk is, Ki toavas Mitzrayim kol roei tzon. Therefore, when Paro calls you and asks you what you do, what should you tell him? What would you imagine? Don't ever mention that you ever saw a sheep in your life. Your plumbers, your whatever, right? Carpenters. You don't know from sheep. You never saw a sheep. You don't know what a shepherd is. Don't mention ever that you are shepherds. You know what Yosef tells his brothers? When Paro will ask you, Mama Seichem, what do you do for a living? You should say the following. Roei tzon hayu avodecha. We always were shepherds. Minureinu adata. But not that we became shepherds now. We always were shepherds. From the time that we're young. Gam avoseinu. Not only were we shepherds, our fathers were shepherds. And their fathers were shepherds. We don't know anything else except being shepherds. Why? The man yeshvu be'eretz Goshen, in order that you should be put in Goshen, ki toavas Mitzrayim ka roei tzon. Because we don't want to assimilate. And therefore, if you tell them that you're roei tzon, they're going to get sick. They're going to get nauseous. Oh, we don't want you around us. You're shepherds. So we'll put you in Goshen. That's exactly what they wanted. And that's why Yosef tells his brothers, I'm going to tell Paro, Achai ubeis avi asher be'eretz Kenan bo elai. Something's wrong with that pasuk. Listen again. Achai ubeis avi asher be'eretz Kenan bo elai. What's wrong with the pasuk? There's a letter that doesn't make sense. It should say, Achai ubeis avi asher me'eretz Kenan bo elai. My father and brothers who had come from Eretz Kenan came to me. Because if they came to me, they're not in Eretz Kanan. What does it mean? Achai ubeis avi asher be'eretz Kanan. Should say it, asher me'eretz Kanan. But that's what he's telling his brothers. And when he tells the Paro, he says it like this. Achai ubeis avi bo me'eretz Kanan. But when he tells his brothers, he tells them, you haven't left Eretz Israel. You brought a little bit of Eretz Israel and transplanted it in Mitzrayim. And you're going to live amongst the Egyptians, but not with them. The Me'iri says that the evil in this world is like the sea. And the way to escape it is like a boat. Now on the surface, that Miri is extremely difficult. Because you can't escape the sea in a boat. A boat can only exist on the water. But the Miri should have said is, the evil in this world is like the sea. And the way to escape it is like an amphibious craft. Where you can get back on the dry land, get out of the sea. What the Miri means is the following. There is no way of escaping evil in this world. You can't run away from it. It's everywhere. There is no place in this world where there aren't bad influences. Everywhere. Everywhere. Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, there are bad influences. I'm sure you're aware of that already. I hope not too aware. Me'asharim, there are bad influences. Everywhere in the world. The sea is everywhere. You can't isolate yourself from the world. The most you can do is insulate yourself. You can be in a boat that doesn't let the water in. You're amongst, but you're not with. That is the goal. And therefore, you can't run away from Mitzrayim. We'd have to be in Mitzrayim. But we don't have to be with Mitzrayim. We can be amongst Mitzrayim. and therefore we're going to create a little enclave of Eretz Israel amongst the Egyptians, and we're going to live in that little world, even though we're amongst the Egyptians. That was the goal. And that's why they sent Yehuda to set up the Beis Medrash in the place where they're going to be, not Levi. Levi was Rosh Yeshiva. Yehuda was the king. Why did Yehuda have to set up the Yeshiva? Levi should have set it up. But here what they were doing was going to conquer a portion of Mitzrayim peacefully and make it an embassy. An embassy of a country in another country is the territory of that country whose embassy it is. The American embassy in Yerushalayim, or in Tel Aviv, whichever one, is American soil. If you go there, right, you are under the laws of America, not of Israel. It's recognized as an enclave of the country whose embassy it is in a foreign country. So if you go there, you are under the auspices of the American government, not the Israeli government. So that's what Yehuda did. He created an enclave of Eretz Israel in Mitzrayim. And as long as the Jews stayed there and didn't assimilate, everything was fine. As soon as they left there and they and the Medrash says they started going to the Egyptian circuses and Egyptian theaters, then Vayakom Melech Chodesh al Mitzrayim. So Yosef understood that his father would come to Mitzrayim only if he wouldn't assimilate. Paro intended to send wagons only for the family and not for any of their possessions, in order that he could outfit them in a way that they would assimilate into Mitzrayim. And he thought that he would entice Yaakov to come with that offer. Yosef knew that if he made that offer to his father, he'd never come. So in order to fulfill Paro's wishes, but in a different way, the opposite way, he sent extra wagons for the possessions also, so they could recreate a little Eretz Yisrael within Mitzrayim. That's the case. So the Medrash that says that Yehuda burnt the original wagons doesn't mean he burnt them. It means he negated the Avodah Zarah that was inherent in their idea of assimilation by taking the wagons that Yosef gave him and taking him out of Mitzrayim, even though Paro didn't say to do it. Now for that, you need a melech. Now what's Egla Rufa? How do we know that the last thing that Yaakov and Yosef were discussing was Egla Rufa? It was a Chazal had some kind of Kabbalah. So I found that the Das Akenim Bale HaTosa says a very simple, logical reason. How we know that? What was the last conversation that Yosef probably had with Yaakov? Yaakov called him and he said, I want to send you to your brothers, right? Find out what's doing. And they said goodbye. And then the halacha is that Yaakov escorted Yosef out. That's the halacha. You have to give somebody levaya, you have to give him an escort when he leaves. That's the halacha. Where do we learn that halacha from? Egla Rufa. Because it says that when somebody's found murdered, and we don't know who murdered him, so the Beis Din of the closest city to that body has to bring an egla and behead it, and they have to wash their hands over the egla, and they have to say, Yodeinu lo shafchu es adam hazeh, we didn't spill this blood. Now why? We think the Beis Din are the murderers? They have to tell us they're not the murderers? So Rashi says, based on a Gemara in Sota, the Gemara says that the Beis Din says the following: we did not see this person and let him go without food and drink and without an escort. Because if you escort somebody, they're protected. And if you don't escort them, you take away that protection. So the Beis Din has to say, we did not contribute to this murder by not giving the person food and drink for the what's it called? We didn't know about him and let him go without food and drink, and we didn't, what's it called, not escort him. Now, that doesn't mean that every time somebody travels, you have to escort him the whole way. Now, the person wasn't, you only have to escort him 4 amas, or till the city line. The guy was killed somewhere 20 miles away from that. So what is going to help if I escort him 4 amas to save him from being killed 20 miles later? Says the Maral, The idea of escorting somebody is that you show that you want to be with that person. And even though physically you stop at a point, but you, by mind, go along with him. And therefore he's connected to you. He's no longer an individual. For an individual to survive, he needs a lot of schus. But when you're part of the klal, you need less schus. So when you escort somebody, even for amos, you make a connection between you and him, and he's no longer an individual, he's part of a klal. And therefore, his zechuyos are stronger, but could have protected him from being murdered. It didn't. But it's not because he was an individual and I didn't give him that ability to be part of the klal. That's the idea. Memela, what do we see from that? So, Yaakov Avinu said to Yosef, I'm going to escort you. And Yosef, if you were Yosef, what would you say to your father? Please, not necessary. Right? You don't have to escort me. Please, go home. And if you were Yaakov, you would say, no, escorting is very important. And Yosef would say, how do you know that? He said, because we learned from Egla Rufa. So the last thing they were discussing was Egla Rufa. Because of this thing, because Yosef was telling his father, go home, it's not necessary to escort me. And Yaakov was telling him, it's important to escort, and where do we learn from Egla Rufa? But what do you see from there? That a person is where he wants to be, not where he actually is physically. I could be here, but if I want to be with you, it's considered like I'm with you. And that's why an Egla, an Agala is called an Egla. Oh, that's why an Egla, that's why an Agala is called an Agala. Why? Because wagons were pulled by calves, by Eglas. So the Chora, why is the wagon called on the name of the calf? Why isn't the calf called on the name of the wagon? Why isn't a calf called a Karona, because it pulls a Karon, then an Agala called an Agala because it's pulled by an Egla? The answer is that something gets its identity by where it's going. The Egla is what's movable, that gives the identity to the wagon. The wagon is stationary, doesn't give an identity to the calf that's movable. Again, the same idea. A person is not necessarily where they are physically, but where they're going. And therefore you can be in Mitzrayim, but if your mind is in Eretz Yisrael, it's like you're in Eretz Yisrael. And you can be in Eretz Yisrael and your mind is in Chutz La'aretz like you're in Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, Yaakov got the hint from Yosef. Because he sent those extra wagons for all the material possessions. That's what Yaakov saw. He understood that Yosef didn't want him to assimilate. And that they could come to Mitzrayim and not assimilate. How so? Because they would create an enclave in Mitzrayim that would be basically mentally there in Eretz Yisrael. Even though they happened to be amongst the Egyptians. All of that is what Yaakov saw, and that's what gave him his life back. That, in my estimation, is what's going on here. Based on that, I want to explain a very difficult Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says that Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma was traveling, and he met somebody on the road, and the person gave him shalom, nice person, and he answered him shalom. And the person said, where do you come from? So Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma says, I come from a city that's full of Talmidei Chachamim. So the man said, wow, I come from a city that's no Talmidei Chachamim. How would you like to come, Lodur Imanu Bimkomenu, live with us in our place, and I'll give you money, gold, silver, precious gems, no limit. Just come live with us in our place. We need Talmidei Chachamim in our place. Now, if you were Yosef ben Kisma, or Mrs. Yosef ben Kisma, and you got this offer, how would you respond? What would you think the proper response is? Forget about the Mishnah. What would you think the proper response is? I'll tell you what I would think. I'm given an unlimited budget. I'd bring a yeshiva, a girls' school, an elementary school, a kollel, and start a new Makom Torah. That were being offered unlimited funds. So, start a new Makom Torah. Isn't that the way every Makom Torah started? You think B'nai Brak was a Makom Torah before the Chazon Ish went there? Yerushalayim was the Makom Torah. The Chazon Ish settled in B'nai Brak and made it a Makom Torah. You think Lakewood, New Jersey was a Mukum Torah before Aaron Cutler went there? When he came to America, there was no Torah in Lakewood. It was a resort place. He made it into a Mukum Torah. Every Mukum Torah in the world was created by somebody who went to a place where there wasn't a Mukum Torah and created one. So why didn't Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma say, oh wow, and here I have an unlimited budget, I'm coming, I'll create a Mukum Torah in your place. What did Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma say? You can give me all the money in the world, and neni dar eleba Mukum Torah, I'm going to stay and live in my Mukum Torah, seemingly, that's what he said. What kind of ridiculous thing is that? So I'll tell you what I think. That's not what Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma said. Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma didn't like the wording of the invitation. What was the invitation? Ritzoncha shetadur imanu bimkomenu. There is a redundancy. If he said, Ritzoncha shetadur imanu, obviously bimkomenu. You want to live with us? Obviously in our place. Or he could have said, you want to live in our place? Obviously with us. Why do you have to repeat? Ritzoncha shetadur imanu bimkomenu. Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma understood that the offer was the following. You come and live not amongst us, but with us. Shoulder to shoulder. So Yosef ben Kisma said, if I do that, I'm not going to be mashpi on you. You're going to be mashpi on me. We'll all reach the lowest common denominator. I'm willing to come to your place. But in any dor ele b'makom Torah, I'm going to create a makom Torah within your place. Amongst you, but not with you. And I'm going to set standards that are different than your standards. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to look up to my Mukum Torah and to come and visit my Mukum Torah. And to be part of my Mukum Torah. But I'm going to create a Mukum Torah where I'm going to live in your place. But I'm not going to live with you in your place. I'll live amongst you. That's how Torah gets built. It doesn't get built by people coming and reaching the lowest common denominator. It gets built by creating a Mukum Torah in a place, amongst a place, right? But there's a certain distance, a certain insulation that Mukum Torah can influence the others. Levium. The Levium, Shevet Levi, are the Mashpiim of Klal Yisrael. Yet Shevet Levi was separated from Klal Yisrael. Because in order to Mashpi on somebody, you have to create amongst, but not with. Because if it's with, right, some people feel that parents should be their children's friends, and in that respect they should be mamash like one happy, not one happy family, but everybody the same. And children in America today, there's a sheet that the children call their parents by the first names, and parents call their children by first names. It's even worse sometimes. Parents call their children, children call their parents by first names, and parents say Mr. or so and so to their children. But not talking about that. It sounds nice. But children like that have two more friends, but they have no parents. Parents have to have a certain distance. They're parents. They're authority figures. They can be very friendly, but they can't be their children's friends, because then they're not parents. Rabbonim have to be very friendly, but they can't be their balabatim's friend, because then they don't have a rav. They have a friend. In order to be mashpi on somebody, there has to be a certain distance where the person who's being mushpa can look up to the Mukum Torah that the person who's mashpia creates to give that person something to look up to. Because if they're just on the same level, shoulder to shoulder, then there's nothing to look up to, and the hashpa will go both ways. And everybody will reach the lowest common denominator. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma said, I'll come to live amongst you, not with you. I'll come in your place and create a Mukum Torah amongst you. But in any dor eleba Mukum Torah, I will only live in a Mukum Torah. I'm not going to live with you in your place. And you are welcome to share that Mukum Torah with me. But not that I'm going to come and we'll just live shoulder to shoulder. That's not going to accomplish anything. So that's what Yosef understood is the only way for them to live and survive Mitzrayim, is to create an enclave of Eretz Yisrael within Mitzrayim, where the Jews would live in a little Eretz Yisrael transposed into Mitzrayim. That's what the Yosef said by sending the extra agolos, and that was the hint to Egla Rufa, that you are where your mind is, not necessarily where your body is. That's the Indian of
Eglarufa and Levaya and escorting somebody.